I want you to have a full idea of the costs and things you're going to have to consider when you're looking at buying these buildings and just budgeting for it. Welcome back to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, and I'm your host, Jerry Alexander. Our aim with the show is to give you some inspiration, some ideas, cautionary tales, demystify the bull****, and to sometimes give you real focused actions and checklists that you can take away and use. Who keeps doing that? Today, I'm going to talk through three more steps as a bit of a follow-up to an episode we did on the 8th of Feb called The Hidden Purchase Cost for My First Commercial Building. Catchy title if I do say so myself. Excuse me, I'm trying to do a podcast over here. Yeah, I've got some new buttons. Okay, just before I get stuck into that, I want to say thank you to our listeners who've recently left us some fantastic reviews on iTunes, including listeners in the UK, Ireland, and the States. Thank you all so much. Very much appreciated. If you haven't already filled out a review, please do. We don't want you to feel left out now. Okay, so let's move on. Three broad areas I'm going to cover in this episode. First one, considerations when carrying out a transaction. This is as a buyer. What are some of the things you need to do on that transaction date? Two, costs to account for between that purchase date and the build out. These essentially are professional fees, some of which you may not have thought of, which have to generally come out of your pocket rather than bank debt. And then the third one is ongoing cost once you've got those keys. So even while the property's empty and nobody's using it, there can still be costs. Essentially, in this episode, I'm taking you from the day of the transaction, albeit some of these things need to be quantified before that transaction date, but nevertheless, from the day of the transaction through to the end of the build-out. But I'm not going to include actual build-out costs themselves. They can vary too much on buildings, okay? But needless to say, this episode is going to cover a lot of ground. And if you want a copy of these checklists, I'm sure we can put something together for you. Just ping us an email and we'll see what we can do to send you over a summary sheet. This isn't, of course, an exhaustive list. I'm bound to have forgotten something huge and important, but here goes. Let's get stuck in. Transaction considerations. This is the stuff to settle or finalise on the day of the transaction. First thing I've got down here is deposits. Now, often deposits aren't actually discussed. Often the commercial lawyers don't actually think about them. And I would just like to point out that even if the other party does say there are no deposits, sometimes there have been. I've had it where 5, 6, 7 years into owning a property, somebody's leaving, a client. This is, of course, just to give a bit of context here, I'm talking about buildings where somebody is already as an existing tenant. They're maybe not our client. They maybe not got the whole building, but they've got some proportion of it and they've put in a deposit. Anyway, so I've had it where some clients are moving out and they're like, so can we have our deposit back? It's like, what deposit? And the seller has been forgetful maybe, but certainly has indicated there are no deposits. So what I would say is, even if they purport there's no deposits, get an indemnity there in case somebody turns around and says there are. And that's something your lawyer can help out with, something you can do in the negotiations. But if there are deposits, it's agreed, then those will effectively come off the purchase cost. So rather than sending them £500,000 for the building, you'll send them £500,000 less the deposits. And another part to think about, and it's so important that it's done on the exact day, is rent apportionment and service charge apportionment. So this is where generally a commercial client will be paying up front for space. So if the transaction date doesn't take place on the rent day, which is almost all the time, then there's going to be some kind of rent that's been paid up front to the landlord that actually is now going to be due to you because now you own the building. So if there was 3 months of quarterly payments and you're halfway through a quarter, then actually half of the rent that the landlord has received is now due back to you. And again, that can come off the amount of money you're sending over for the purchase. They'll all get done on a summary sheet with your lawyer. The service charge one is slightly more tricky because service charge apportionment is based around, often around budget. But of course, what you want is the reality, not the budget. And again, customers will pay generally, especially if it's a managed building or it could be a multi-let, of course, but it's got a management agreement. It's got a lease in place with a service charge, but it's managed by an agent or by the landlord. Then there will be charges based on a budget for the next quarter of what they think the service charge is going to be. In reality, it may be higher, it may be lower, but it gives the customer the opportunity to pay as the year goes through, and then they'll settle up at the end of the year. That's quite a tricky one, but you need to get that squared away on or at the day of the transaction. Okay, moving on. What about capital allowances? Has a Section 198 election for capital allowances been filled out? Has the previous owner claimed all the capital allowances or wishes to claim more and has effectively passed the value on to you as a pound? Now, this should form part of the negotiations, of course, because there is value in here for you. There should be value in here for you. And it might be that actually they have never claimed capital allowances, but you still need that paperwork filled out so you have the opportunity to claim the capital allowances. Now, the point being that capital allowances, certainly in the UK, can allow you to offset against profit. So it's a way of reducing your tax burden, which is great. However, of course, if the building you're taking on is going to be going through a complete refurb, then this may be a moot point because you're going to be putting in the new heating, the plumbing, the electrics and all the other bits and pieces that you might be able to claim on. Next one I've got down is the VAT. I mentioned this in the last episode. The TOG, trading as a going concern. If the property being sold to you is agreed to be sold as a trading as a going concern, the VAT isn't actually payable. It's put in the paperwork, but you don't actually have to pay it. But if you can't convince the seller or it doesn't indeed meet the threshold to be sold as a trading as a going concern, and you have to pay the VAT, then of course, silly thing to say, really, but you're going to have to remember to claim it back in that first month, second month, third month, whenever it is that's sitting on your VAT cycle. Obviously, you want to get that money back. And of course, before the transaction, if you haven't got the spare money, then you may need a VAT loan to make sure you've got it covered. And if you're doing a small transaction, okay, it's still 20% though, isn't it? But if you're doing a larger transaction, it can be a significant amount of money. Toupee. What is toupee other than... something you might put on your head. This is law around employees or contractors that are working for a specific business or a specific building where they have a right to maybe transfer with the building and continue with their job, their role. So this is something that needs to be discussed with the vendor before time, with your lawyer, maybe even with an HR advisor on who needs to come over to you under toupee. Something sometimes is forgotten. Sometimes the vendor doesn't talk about it and then, boom, you're presented with these people. So toupee it's called. Speak to your HR lawyer or your lawyer about that one. Meter readings. Just as you would with Resi, let's get it measured. Let's see where the gas and the electric is so that we can leave that with the previous owner and start afresh. What about EPCs? Are they in place? Hopefully they are. Let's get them. Asbestos report. Again, important document. Should be handed over to you. May well have been handed over to you before the event, of course, because you've checked it over to see how it all works. How the building is and what the liabilities might be. And then the last one in this part I've got here is a letter. So the existing clients, of course, I'm talking about the building being maybe partially let. So the existing clients or lessees need to be informed of what's going on. And you don't really want the rumour mill doing it. And you don't want it being done 2 or 3 weeks after the transaction and they never even knew. So what we've done in the past is we've produced a letter from ourselves and that has gone to the clients with a letter from the previous owner, which is explaining that the transaction has taken place. Nothing's going to be changing particularly straight away. You know, whatever it is you want to put in there to settle their nerves, make sure they get it explained to them and there's a smooth transition. So the clients know what's going on. Let me take a moment to thank Office R&D for supporting the podcast. It's really important to us that we only work with sponsors that we've used ourselves. It's all about being authentic, right? Office R&D is the best flexible workspace platform we've come across, and believe me, we've tried a few systems over the last 20 years. Office R&D helps us manage our invoicing, customer community, reporting, building access, and many more aspects of our day-to-day operations. Why not book yourself a free demo to see how they can help you free up more time to grow your business? Follow the partner link in the show notes. Going on. And of course, it gives them, or you should give them, new contact details for who they contact, whether you've got a managing agent, you're doing it yourself, you've got an accountant who's dealing with the building, so they've got someone to communicate with should there be any issues. And a few extra things just to ask for, just a little random list here. There's the Legionnaires testing. These things may or may not be in place, but if there has been any Legionnaires testing, that would be great. Any emergency light testing, you know, for battery testing, drain down tests, that sort of thing. If there is any documentation out, that'd be great, because then you just continue with it. Electrical certification. I don't know if any buildings have had all of this stuff. I've had one or two things. A fire strategy plan, sure. If they've got one, it would be great. Unless you're going to completely reconfigure the building, that would be useful as a starter for 10. Manuals. Are there any manuals for the heating, for the electric system, or for the, the security alarm, anything like that? Anything's helpful, right? Best I've had really is boxes of details left by various maintenance contractors over the years. Sometimes it's like forever, 20 years old or whatever. Some of it helpful, some of it not. As-built drawings, have you had any of those? Are there any as-built drawings? I don't think I've ever been given as-built drawings, but nevertheless, it's something to ask for. If they're there, if you don't ask, you don't get. And going back to the maintenance contractors, if there's any maintenance contracts in place, clearly we need to know all the numbers, phone numbers and everything else. And really, you need to get all of that on that day, or at least leading up to that day. So this list is not something that hopefully you're going to just pop out on the day and say, right, can I have this, this and this. You've maybe used it beforehand just to go through with the lawyer. Right, these are all the documents I'm looking for. You're not going to get all of them. I haven't got all of them. Ask and then you may receive. Okay, second part. After buying the property, there's going to be a few costs to budget for. These are before the build. But the thing about these ones is they often need to come out of your money rather than bank debt, because these are now planning for the build. Asbestos survey. If that hasn't come to you, which sometimes it doesn't, you're going to have to get one done so that everybody knows where it is, how to plan for it, if there is any, of course, and how to treat it. So when anybody comes on site, they know there's an asbestos survey and a maintenance plan if there needs to be one. Architects for planning, building warrant, drawings, all that stuff, we know there's going to be costs for that, of course, and the application for the building warrant and the planning applications. But sometimes you'll also need to be shelling out a bit more for engineering costs, more than you maybe have done in the past. HVAC. You might need someone to come in and look at the ventilation, air conditioning, heating, all that stuff. And that might actually need someone to survey it and to cost it up and to spec it, not actually the people who are going to come and do it, right? So there's some drawings that need to be done for the systems so that people can actually quote to you. And then, of course, there's heating and mechanical engineer costs, people that may be designing out certain aspects that of the electric, where the layout is, et cetera, and some of the heating. Of course, a QS to measure all this stuff up and get you ready for the contracts to go out. And another one, which I've just chucked in here, is drain survey. Not something you always think about, but then suddenly one of the pipes, when there's a downpour, is letting water come in the building because it's backed up. Something you need to get done. An extra cost. And there will be other ones which I've not thought of here that will come up. What I wanted to do was just kind of park the more professional stuff in one bracket. The next one is about ongoing costs while you wait for the development to start and to finish. And these costs, some of them you'll be used to in Resi, but some of them might be higher or new. And I don't tell you all this stuff to scare you or even to bore you, but to forewarn you so you can be ready to try and mitigate and potentially reduce these costs. So forewarned is forearmed, as they say. Okay. First one, obvious, finance costs. Now, if you've got limited or no income to offset against that, every month, every week, every day, the finance costs are going up. If you've had to pay more money for this building, or you've got maybe rates that you weren't quite used to when you were doing resi, then they can start adding up. Business rates. This is interesting. Business rates, the landscape's changing a little bit right now, particularly for vacant buildings. So I would suggest, I'm going to try and do a podcast at some point about this when I can gather enough information, but I would suggest that you check in with the local authority, local council, to check what the business rates, building property taxes are like, particularly for vacant, because some property, some councils now are saying that actually rather than having 10% business rates relief, which was pretty pants, we're going to give you 100%. But only for 6 months, and then you have to pay 100%, or maybe for 3 months. So each of them seem to be doing slightly different things. This is in Scotland anyway, where the Scottish Government has passed that responsibility on to the local authorities. I'm not 100% sure about England, but what I would suggest is it's a moving feast. So make sure you check out what the deal is, and even if you do get told, yes, you can get empty property rates relief for, say, 6 months, if the previous owner has already claimed it, you're not going to get it. So yeah, something just, it's a bit of a, I wouldn't say a minefield, but it's definitely something that's fairly complex and you just need to go and check out exactly what's going on in your target area where your building is. If you can't mitigate those or the mitigation is pretty small, then business rates can be quite costly because basically a business rate is worked out on what they think the assessor thinks the rent should be for that building. So if they think you should be renting that building out for £100 a square metre or £10 a square foot, roughly, then that's what they're going to allocate to it. That's not how much you have to pay. Generally, you have to pay roughly half of that. But if they think it's £100 a metre, then your business rates liability is going to be £50 a metre, roughly. Sometimes it's 49.8, sometimes it's 51 point something or another. But basically, it's around about 50%. So if the building overall has a £30,000 business rates valuation, then the liability could be £15,000 a year. So it soon adds up, right? Water and wastewater. So investors forget about this because in resi, it's covered in council tax bills, but not here. So when you take on a property and the previous landlord or indeed you have informed the local tax council authority, whatever, that you now are responsible for this building, in the UK certainly, the water companies will start sending you, not only will they send you a little notice saying, we know you now own this building, they'll just start sending you bills. I mean, it's a bit of a racket. They just send you a bill. So but another interesting one is you subdivide, you create smaller units, and perhaps they haven't got any water supply. You still get a bill because what happens is they have a bot or whatever that trawls the rates register to check out when any new listings come on or when any changes happen so they know who to send a bill to. They get a lot of things wrong. They make a mess of our rivers. They send us gazillions of bills, but one thing they get right is they send those bills straight out, whether there's a meter or not. That bit they're good at. Anyway, it's something to think about. It's not unbelievably excessive, but it's painful nevertheless. And whether you're using the building or not, they will be charging you for waste water. Okay, lovely. Heating. Now, if it's the summer, you may think, well, I don't need any heating on. If it's the winter, then maybe you do, not all the time, but this is to prevent damage. I've seen it where sometimes a building has been okay condition handed over, but then they turn off the heating, the ceiling tiles start curling up, you can never get them to curl back down. The moisture that was getting in, because the roof hadn't really been repaired for a while, now starts damaging stuff properly rather than just being a little bit of a stain on the ceiling or something. So actually, heating on can prevent that damage. Sure, you want to maybe drain down pipes and things, but if you have the heating on just for an hour in the morning, hour in the evening, it's just going to help prevent some of that, not just the heating freezing, but also just some of that damage that can happen with damp coming through into buildings. And that smell, that pungent smell you get when you go into damp buildings. And if you're going to start doing viewings, it's probably quite useful to make sure that pungent smell isn't there in the place. The environment feels reasonably warm. Okay, it may look a tip, but if you've just bought a building that's been vacant, but nevertheless, something to think about from the environment point of view, so that when you've got viewings going on, they feel a bit more comfortable. Okay, minimal electrical use. Sure, there's not going to be loads, but bear in mind, standing charges are quite high nowadays. So when you do that electric meter reading, and then you perhaps take on a new provider, the standing charge can be £10, £20, maybe more per day. It's based on the meter size. So again, it's not a huge amount of money, but if it's £10 a day, it's £3,500 a year, plus a little bit, of course. It's not cheap. It all adds up. So just, it's another cost you might not have thought about that you need to add into your calculations. Building insurance. So make sure the building is insured for the right rebuild costs. And often investors, when they buy a building, they get a quote, they're like, oh my goodness, this is expensive. They'll go to the previous owner and say, how much was your insurance? You told me it was only blah. And they're like, yeah, it was only that amount. Here's the people that we insured with. But what you find most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, it was underinsured. The rebuild cost was underinsured. So you need to make sure that when you've had your own valuation, which you should have had, but if you haven't, make sure you get a valuation that tells you at least what the rebuild cost would be, because then you'll at least get the right insurance on it. One of my good friends recently had a situation where a building was slightly underinsured, so when a claim came through, they took a percentage off based on how much it was underinsured. And, you know, build costs have just gone up, haven't they? Drastically. So a lot of buildings right now will be underinsured. The other part of the insurance bit I want to just flag up is that if the building's going to be vacant, then it can increase the cost of the insurance 3-4-fold sometimes. So again, even though the previous owner who was occupying the building said their insurance was £1,000 a year or £2,000 a year, when you take it on, you insure it for the proper reinstatement value and it's vacant, don't be surprised if it's £5,000 or £6,000 a year or more. So don't go with what the previous owner was saying. Make sure you check it out. I've mentioned before, we use Ross, a good friend of mine, Anderson Smith Insurance, to do ours. Even before we buy a building, it's just like, Ross, here's the postcode, here's the building, here's what the use is going to be, here's the vacancy or the vacancy rate, how much is this thing going to cost? It just gives you an idea for your budgets. Building security. Are you going to need some security? Do you have a system there that when you buy the building, it's there? Is the thing going to be empty or not? Are you even going to need someone on site to look after the building? We had to do that once. City centre, lots of scaffolding going up the building. It just seems that certain individuals like to climb scaffolding. I might have been one of them when I was younger, I don't know. But basically, people are climbing up scaffolding. Some of them are maybe doing more than just that. You need someone on site just to protect the building and the people that are scaling it so that there's no liability there. And that's going to cost you money, and certainly money we hadn't budgeted for. And finally, what about project overruns? So all of these costs that I've just spoken about, unfortunately, they're pretty much all of them are not one-off costs. They're ongoing, monthly. So you might budget for 12 months, but if the project runs on, now we're talking 18 months, and all of these costs are still going out. Business rates still need to go out, unless you've mitigated them. Water and waste still needs to go out. The finance costs, the standing charges on your electric and your gas, if you've got gas, building insurance is still needed, building security, all these things still going out the door. So like I said, I didn't want to scare you with this stuff, but also I want you to have a full idea of the costs and things you're going to have to consider when you're looking at buying these buildings and just budgeting for it. it's not stopped us buying buildings, but every time we've bought one, there's just that little extra of, oh yeah, that's another piece of the jigsaw. I need to remember that. I may not have covered them all. I hope I have. And well done for lasting if you're still here with me. I told you it'd be detailed. Now, I will do a summary, a summary sheet. If people want to ask for it, then let me know. Otherwise, I'm not going to bother. But basically, if people ask for it, we'll put one together and we'll make it so that you can download that. We have some really interesting interviews coming up over the next few weeks, by the way, including some really interesting people from the flex space industry. And we're even going to do a UK budget review. So the budget's out. In fact, it might have just come out yesterday, thinking about when this podcast is coming out. I'm going to do a budget review with Adam Lawrence. That's going to come up next week. If you have any topics or guests that you wish for us to interview or talk about or research, then please do reach out. All suggestions are looked at. There's been a number of episodes recently that have been based on questions that we've been asked. Now, I hope you find this useful. Please feel free to share it with anyone you think that is in a position where they're getting ready to buy a building, they're buying the first building. Certainly this series, if I was smart, I'd have the numbers of the podcasts that are all related to this series, but this series about costs and the stages as you lead up to buying a building and then beyond will hopefully help some people get through that process without too much blood and bruises. Okay, thank you. This has been Jerry Alexander. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for listening. Speak to you again very soon.